Well, welcome back to The Sound of Safety, presented by Sincere. This is our second podcast in the series of six with Dr. Keith Darrow. Dr. Darrow, thank you again for joining us today. It's a pleasure having you as part of this series, and we're privileged to have you. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for the invite, and thank you for the opportunity to help educate those, especially in the workforce, be it the employees or the employers, about hearing safety. It's so important. It's one of those things that it's pretty easy to look past, but it's really important that we talk about it because of the potential long-term economic, social, and cognitive consequences of hearing loss.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about this next series. I mean, having spent over 10 years in the healthcare industry, really getting past, you know, the widgets and the practices and the processes, all the things that we don't, and really trying to get to educating our end users on what they should look for. How is hearing loss actually experienced, both physically as well as mentally? I mean, we know, you know, OSHA states that noise above 85 decibels for a prolonged period of time can have irreversible effects, but most people don't even know what does 85 decibels mean to them. You know, when you break it down, and you know, it's a lawnmower, it's a leaf blower, it's city traffic, things like that, they're a little bit more common. But the layman doesn't really, oftentimes in my experience in talking to workers, is they don't understand. They don't understand exactly what those noise levels associated with that we throw out there and the standards, and then what is actually happening to them physiologically over time as hearing loss occurs.
Look, it's so, I appreciate the work that OSHA has done. So I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, it's all wrong, it's all bad. Look, they're trying, but the measurement of sound is very complex. Just on the basis of, it depends on the amount of time exposure, right? So 85 decibels, whatever that number may mean, doesn't mean a lot if it's 10 minutes, but it means a heck of a lot if you're in that environment for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And so it is very complex to sort of wrap your head around, when is it too loud? Because you have to consider volume, you have to consider distance from the volume. So a leaf blower is very loud if you hold it up next to your ear. Right. It's not that loud when your neighbor's using it. It's annoying, but it's not loud, right? And so it's just a complex thing. And I think because there's no simple way to measure it, at least that's readily available, most people are like, not a big deal. I can't worry about it. I got to get to work. I got to finish my task at hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where a lot of it just gets lost. I mean, you brought up a really great point. I mean, there's so many complex factors and variables that go into really measuring what noise levels, you know, involves, you know, proximity, time, exposure, all of those different things. So let's break it down for the end users from a healthcare perspective. You know, as a young professional coming in and looking over, you know, 20 years of working 8, even 12 hour type of shift work, what is actually occurring with our inner ear and, you know, the physiological aspects and impact of noise-induced pollution in the workplace and occupational hearing loss?
Sure. Give me 1 minute to come back to what actually happens in the ear. I want to clarify when it comes to volume levels. Here's how simple I try to make it when I work in the occupational noise setting. If it feels like it's a little too loud, if you're like, I don't know, chances are it's too loud. And what I mean by too loud is it's damaging your ears. And I think the most important point to make is, and we'll dive into some of the details for those who want to geek out with us, the damage that occurs from noise is permanent. And I think that's the most important point. There used to be this concept of, oh, you know, you damage some of the cells in the ear, but the next day, maybe 2 days later, you seem to hear fine again. The ringing in your ears has gone away. You know, the hearing hangover that lasted for a few hours is now gone. And so you think everything's fine. And science used to think this also. Mm-hmm. But now we understand at a very microstructural level, the damages that happen from acoustic noise exposure are permanent and they're long lasting. The problem is, and here's where people get lost, is it can take 10, 20 years to manifest itself. It can take 10 to 20 years to become symptomatic. So, you know, you're in your 30s, you're in your 40s, you're exposed to loud noise. You don't think much of it because it's not affecting you today. The truth is it's affecting you tomorrow. You know, the easiest analogy is if you go to a dermatologist because you're worried about skin cancer from a sunburn, it's not the sunburn from yesterday or even last summer or the summer before that. It's all the cumulative sun exposure starting when you were young that dramatically increases your risk of skin cancer. And it's the same analogy for hearing.
So I'm kind of curious then, I mean, when we consider our employees, and I mean, do you encourage people to have, I mean, over that period of time to, we go get our eyes checked. We do our annual checkup. Hearing is kind of one of those things that seems like a lot of people don't necessarily address until it's too late. And so from a preventative standpoint, we can talk about all the safety apparel and stuff too, but what should workers be doing in their personal time to monitor this so that we don't get 15, 20 years down the road and have something that we now can't do anything about?
Sure. So at a minimum, like I have a general rule of thumb, and here's how I try to get people to remember it. If you're not exposed to noise, if you don't work in a noisy environment, you should have your first comprehensive hearing test when you're 50. And here's the way to remember it, because there's something else we do when we're 50. We check our rears and we check our ears. So those are the two things that you have to do when you turn 50. If you're not in noise, if you are working in a noisy environment. Now this too, I mean, how do you define noisy environment, right? Some people who have an office job sit next to the printer and, you know, the elevator shaft, and that's pretty noisy. And so I would suggest if you feel like you're in a noisy environment, and dare I say, if you know you work in a noisy environment, you should absolutely start getting your hearing test as soon as that exposure starts. And then you should monitor it on an annual basis at a minimum. So 30, let's say. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, you know, you keep coming back to, you know, feeling like you're in a too, you know, in a noisy environment, but that doesn't always get associated with pain. So, you know, I think that's something too, you know, if we experience an environment that it's so loud, it's painful, that's intuitive. We get that. But sometimes, you know, how do we judge as, you know, as workers? I mean, obviously we have safety professionals doing, but how do we start gauging that in a more proactive way? Because it doesn't have to necessarily be painful for it to be doing damage.
No, you're 100% right. If it's painful, you've already done damage, right? So uncomfortable. And now your follow-up question is, what does uncomfortable mean? Right? This does boil down to your own self-perception. But look, it's 2023. So at a minimum, even if somebody watches this a year or two from now, as of today, almost everybody has one of these on them, right? And regardless of the maker, I'm not pushing a specific cell phone maker. And lots of people, I mean, I have a traditional watch, but lots of people have electronic watches or digital watches, right? They all have the ability to measure sound. And they all, whether it be on your wrist or it be on your phone, they all have the ability to measure sound. There are, and I'm not going to promote any of them because there's lots of them. There are lots of free volume meter apps out there, right? What Apple did a couple of years ago was they put it in their watch so that if you're in a noisy environment, a buddy of mine, we go see concerts, his watch goes off all the time when we're at the concerts, but he's protecting his ears. So you really could just click on your phone, get a free app and say, hey, what's the volume like in here? And here's the general rule. I don't care how long you're in that environment. If it's over 85, there's the potential for significant damage. Even if you're only in there for 15 minutes, right? There is the potential for long-term permanent damage.
No, that's great advice. I think, you know, workers taking that personal ownership and being proactive is probably one of the biggest things that's really going to drive our compliance. And, you know, as you so eloquently put it in the last one, moving the mountain and making a dent in occupational hearing loss is that the individual users have to educate themselves and have to take ownership for that safety aspect. I think another thing, you know, from a end user standpoint, I mean, you discussed a little bit about, you know, how hearing loss as a mechanism impacts, you know, our physiological, but I want to move past the ear canal. I mean, you're a neurologist. Mm-hmm. I know you do a lot in association with this. Is what is actually happening? What is the neurological responses to hearing loss, and what is happening to the brain over time while this damage is occurring?
So if we, right, if you get right beyond the ear canal, you get through the eardrum, you get through the tiny little bones, you get into the inner ear or the cochlea. And that's where the damage starts. And it's very simple, right? There's a long row of these tiny, tiny little hair cells. Now, most people don't, you can picture a little cell with tiny hairs on top of it. Most people don't know the anatomy of the ear, and that's fine. But a lot of people have heard the terms rods and cones in your eyes. So these tiny cells in your ears are a lot like the rods and cones in your eyes. And like your eyes, there's a natural aging process where the cells begin to break down. And many people have experienced that as soon as you hit about your 45th birthday, you know, you have to hold the menu further and further away at the restaurant, right? So you can, you know that it's changing. With hearing, the changes are so fine as those cells break down, you barely start to notice it. Maybe you get a little bit of ringing. Maybe you get a little bit of, I don't know, it's a little more difficult now that there's all this background and distracting noise. Well, those cells that naturally die with age are also very prone to noise exposure for two basic reasons. One is physical damage, right? The cells in your ear, the louder the sound, they start basically bouncing around, and they can be physically damaged as a result of the sound wave that enters the ear. Okay, so that's pretty easy to comprehend. And then in response to all that physical motion inside the ear, there's these chemicals that get released. Now, they're naturally released and they try to stimulate the brain, right? We use chemicals to stimulate our nerves. If you put out too much chemical, if one nerve talking to another nerve puts out too much chemical, it actually becomes toxic. And so if you're listening to a loud sound, there's going to be more of those chemicals released and it becomes toxic inside the ear. Look, and I might've mentioned this last show, we've only been exposed to loud noise for the last 150 years at most. Prior to that, humans were not exposed to loud things. Our ears were not developed to withstand the impact of loud noise. And so there's physical damage, and then there's actual chemical damage, which then not only do the cells die, but those nerves that connect the ear and the brain, they become poisoned. Basically, it's like the easiest way to put it. And that poison will then kill those nerves and start to detach the ear from the brain.
So when that starts occurring, I mean, we've talked about some of the long-term impacts. How does that begin to translate into those ancillary health impacts that we see over time?
So most people, I've taken a lot of different anatomy classes with a lot of different intentions, including I sat in an anatomy class with medical doctors when I was at Harvard Medical School doing my PhD work. And, you know, there was this basic concept of there's nerves that go from the ear and they go up to the hearing part of the brain. Yes, that's true. But oftentimes what's left out, and the layperson doesn't understand, that those nerves also go everywhere else in the brain. So let's just take the frontal lobe, right? There's lots of ear connections that go up to the front of our brain. Well, the front of the brain is where we do a lot of thinking. It's where a lot of memory is, a lot of decision-making is. Well, there are three traits that come along and are found most often in people with hearing loss: difficulty making decisions, difficulty with, you know, processing things, difficulty with emotions. And so these impacts are much more global. They impact our emotional regions of our brain, the limbic system. They impact our ability to remember things. And so it's a global damage that happens in the brain as a result from a simple little noise exposure.
That's incredible. incredible. I mean, and we talked about how some of these things actually end up manifesting themselves over time. I mean, not beyond just the decision-making memory and those type of things, but dementia, overall mental health aspects as well. And so, you know, now that we've talked about a little bit of the physiological aspects, mental health is also a very key concern. I mean, I've read a lot of studies that, you know, associate hearing loss and, you know, the isolation and depression that comes along with that. Can you speak a little bit about that as well?
Yeah. So probably one of the most well-known and well-researched symptoms of hearing loss is social isolation, right? And it seems almost obvious and to use your word from before, intuitive, that if you can't hear, you start to disconnect from those around you. And this dates back, I mean, there was records of Helen Keller a long time ago saying, you know, my blindness separates me from things. My deafness separates me from people, right? So she put out that anecdotal message about how important hearing was. And then fast forward through the 70s and the 80s, gray paper in 1983, right? So 40 years ago, there was a paper titled Hearing Loss and Social Isolation in Older Adults, right? So this has been documented for a very long time. Well, guess what? Those are in the hearing journals. If you go over to the dementia journals, you're going to read a ton that dates back 40, 50 years about social isolation and the increased risk for dementia. And so there's almost a direct link from hearing loss to isolating people to that isolation leading to declines in memory, thinking, eventually leading to cognitive decline and dementia. It's really a pretty straight arrow from one to the other.
Well, and I would imagine too, I mean, it, you know, as you look at our workforce and, you know, as Social Security keeps moving out, the age of our workforce is continuing to get longer and longer. And so, you know, if we're starting to see these impact, you know, 20, 25 years into a career, and now you're talking about people who are, you know, 30, 40 years, you know, potentially doing shift work and those type of things, this has got to add up into it. I mean, so it's going to feed into our next podcast, I think, really well when we start thinking about, okay, then in the first 20 years, you may not see that in your employees, but as you start getting the second half of their career, what are the productivity and the implications that become of this? Because that's the point that they're going to start seeing these, you know, the impacts from just their physiological and mental state and still being active in the workforce. And
well, I can definitely tell you from the, you know, what we know about hearing loss, also another side effect, if you will, of hearing loss is early retirement and loss of wages, right? And now that significantly impacts the workforce. That significantly impacts the ability to continue to make money and save for retirement. That would then impact your ability to actively age if you're forced to retire early, if you're forced to retire on less money than you had hoped for. So there's really profound effects on not protecting your hearing when you have the opportunity to, right? Because that the problem is you can't go back. There's right. nothing you can do to fix the damage that was done over those 10, 15, 20 years. So you have to be proactive about it. You have to think of your hearing health as preventative medicine.
No, absolutely. I think that's great advice. And so with that note too, you know, I think I want to leave this, you know, with kind of a lasting thought, maybe a lasting recommendation or advice from you is, as we see our workforce change and we have, you know, younger professionals coming in and we see that turnover happen, we obviously always hope for change and improvement and advancement. If you had to speak directly to those young professionals coming in today and give them some advice on how they should do it differently and the ramifications, what would you say to those people?
So I would say two things. Number one, and I just want to reiterate the point of you can measure volume on your own, on your watch, on your phone. If you see numbers above 85, you should be worried. So that's advice number one. Now, number two is how to actually be proactive about it, right? Everybody thinks of hearing protection as big foam plugs that you stick in your ear and now you can't hear anything. Yes, That is an option. It's cheap. You can go to any pharmacy and buy plugs, but you're going to be sort of sitting in your own world all day, potentially dangerous depending on your work environment. Well, guess what? There are so many options out there. Again, without even naming manufacturers, you can simply Google, you know, hearing protection for young adults, cool hearing protection, colorful hearing protection. And the way most of the new hearing protection devices work is they actually allow you to still hear what's happening around you. They actually allow you to still have conversation while protecting your ears. So now there's kind of no excuse. So I would advise you to look into these options that allow you to still go about your day while protecting your hearing. And some of them look pretty cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I appreciate that. And so I think that kind of brings us to the end of our second session. And I want to thank you again, Dr. Darrow, for joining us. And we'll wrap this up. And please, for our viewers, please stay tuned to our next episode, which is going to transition from the employee impacts and really focusing on how those translate into the employer. And I definitely encourage everyone watching, please leave your comments, suggestions, and share your experiences. The only way that we're really going to make an impact in moving the mountain of eradicating occupational hearing loss is if we start talking to one another and start sharing what's worked, what hasn't, because from learning from one another, that's about the only way that we're really going to be able to have an overall impact and have a long-term improvement for the quality of life for our workers. So thank you again, and till next time.
Thank you so much.
Take care.